Hey guys, Sklar Brothers here with Daniel Van Kirk.
I am here.
And our guest on the show is our favorite murderer because she murders this episode. Karen Kilgariff, thanks for joining.
It was my pleasure. What a joy.
We talk about swords.
Oh, yeah.
Sword stores.
A guy who might have deserved to get attacked. Yeah. I'm not saying he did, but he might have.
He's an athlete.
Yeah.
He's an athlete.
That's all you need to know.
Claudia and her life changes.
Tiny Sasquatches.
Tiny Sasquatches.
And the Sheboygan Clogger.
We need the town's help on that one.
This is it. It is Sword Stores, Tiny Sasquatches, and the Sheboygan Clogger with Karen Kilgariff. You have to listen to this week's episode of Dumb People Town.
Hello, I'm Keith and the girls, Keith Malley.
And I'm Hemda. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to My Opening Line, where we talk to comedians, actors, about their first times on stage. Porn stars.
Oh, that's right.
As a matter of fact.
First time on that stage. That was interesting.
Be a subscriber of Laughable. Download the free Laughable app, and you can subscribe to, of course, a podcast like you can on any app, but you can also subscribe to the person. For example, if you subscribe to Gilbert Gottfried on there, for free, of course, it'll tell you every time Gilbert is on a podcast of any kind automatically. That's amazing.
That is amazing. Because some of the comedians that you might love, they might not even host their own podcast. So This is a way to follow them on everybody else's. So, of course, you can follow us, follow My Opening Line, and follow Keith and the Girl.
Well, I didn't just pull that name out of nowhere. Featured on every talk show of any kind. And from the podcast, Gilbert Gottfried's, you got to change your name. A lot of T's, a lot of D's. It's too much. Gilbert Gottfried's amazing, colossal podcast, Gilbert Gottfried.
Yes. And I'll be appearing on the Merv Griffin Show on Wednesday.
Well, yes, you are a veteran comedian.
Yes.
But they're not treating our veterans okay.
I've fought in several wars. I'm a veteran comedian. This is Saturday, right?
Yes.
Okay. I should, because I didn't say it when a week ago when I visited.
Right. Totally different
show.
Time on Keith and the Girl, right?
Yeah.
This is a week ago.
Right.
And I made the trip again.
Oh, we appreciate it. I can't believe I got the, I fucked up with the car again.
Yes. It's kind of like Back to the Future, without the parking.
Did any of the food go stale?
Oh, there is in the New Yorker an article about my sister Arlene, a great article where I talk about her. And let me go back to the past.
Mm-hmm.
Keith, you'll be doing it today. Meaning Sunday, because See, I travel back in time.
Do you even know what you're talking about right now?
I don't. I have no fucking idea.
Okay, we gave him a little wine,
but there is in the New Yorker an article.
You're in
about
the,
my sister.
We were talking on Keith and the Girl about the documentary Gilbert, which
this
is fantastic.
In the past,
most things are
past Sunday,
right? So if you recall, we were talking about the documentary Gilbert and his sister, who passed away recently. She's the one that had stage 4 breast cancer in the documentary, and he does a beautiful,
and in real life,
and in real life,
yeah,
and does a is part of a beautiful article in the New Yorker that you should check out.
Yeah, and her photography is amazing.
Oh, so, thank you.
Yeah, definitely check her out, but only in the
written form.
Oh, yeah. Depending on what time period you're living in.
Well, she's going to be dead always. So yes, it doesn't matter when you check,
but
right?
But that's a fun fact. It was printed on E as a fun fact that she died.
Well, in that documentary, they're telling me you did stand up when you were 14, 15 years old,
yeah.
Right? That's
no, the year was 14, 15.
that's quite some time.
Yes.
Do you remember?
And I think my opening act was Kim Cattrall.
She's getting up there, you're saying. I think that's what you're saying. I'm trying to think, like, how, okay, let's see. It's got to come from a mean place. So what's he thinking?
He's so busy cracking up right now.
He enjoys it.
He can't even deal with what he just said.
I wonder, do you ever have depression?
Yes.
Yeah?
All the fucking time.
Yeah? Are you bipolar? Because you're so fun that I'm thinking of people I know that are so fun, they're always depressed.
Yeah. These people, there is, with I said diaper. Well, that means people so depressed they shit their pants.
But I want to be clear that Hunter was making a joke about the wine. I feel like I want to be clear now.
Okay. And this is me without wine. Right. That's the sad part.
I don't believe you anymore.
Yeah. This is the way my mind operates. With wine, I'd have a normal conversation. Okay.
But do you find yourself getting depressed a lot?
Oh, absolutely.
And then what do you do? Are you stuck in it for hours?
Heroin.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Of all things.
We just learned a secret.
Right.
A trade secret.
How do you get out of
it? I've never tried heroin, but it's like I know from hearing about it.
It's got to be great.
Yes.
It's enough to ruin your life. That's got to be really good.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean,
you want to do it right now?
Yes, I would. Right.
Okay.
I think he would.
Just hold on.
And I know if I ever tried it, I would go, oh, wow, this is good. I got to try it some more. And I think that's the addiction, they say, is really that people love it so much.
I really think you cracked the code there.
Gilbert could teach a class.
Yeah.
That's addiction, you say.
Yeah, that's the real addiction. They say it feels good.
Yeah, you take your kids to a real school, right? You don't do it at home. Okay, good.
No, I turn on PBS and hopefully it's something educational.
Hopefully they're current with their information. Yes. And all of their heroin fun facts.
Oh, Mr. Rogers is teaching crayons now, how they're made. Oh, now it's candles. It's the same thing, Mr. Rogers. My kids aren't learning anything new.
Fun facts. John Belushi choked on his own vomit while in... No, I don't think he choked on his own vomit.
Not a fun fact.
But it's a fun fact. let's say he choked on his own vomit.
We're going to start a podcast.
As did Kim...
We start a podcast for Gilbert Gottfried called It's Totally True, Just Retweet It.
Speaking of Sex in the City, Miranda is running for governor of New York City.
Oh, see, there you go. We were just in the past having a conversation about Schwarzenegger, Trump. And so now, and I think with her, it's one of these things like if 5 minutes before she announced her candidacy, if her agent called and said, oh, we've got a guest spot on whatever, she'd be doing that now.
Right. She was out of work for a minute, and so she's going to be our governor.
Yeah. And it's like, I guess she finally realized, oh, they're not making that Sex in the City sequel.
Right.
So
I'll run the greatest city on earth.
Yes, yes. I'll be governor.
Maybe you run against her. See what happens.
Yeah. Even if it was for publicity, have you ever thought about running for office?
I might as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, even just for the press.
Right. I mean, look at Trump. He did it to sell a book.
See, that's the funny thing.
Hilarious.
With Trump, you know, he probably woke up after he was elected and go, wait, what the hell? You know,
How many books did I sell?
Yeah, yeah. He goes, I wanted to sell books and, you know, fuck some Miss America contestants.
They go, congratulations. He's like, oh, I'm number one?
Yeah. Like, kind of. What is this? I don't want the responsibility.
You thought he was insufferable before, though. After that presidential run.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. So real quick, and by real quick, I mean this is serious, but real quick. How do you get out of your depression when you have it?
There's no way out.
Okay.
Yeah. Except for getting stoned and heroin and crystal meth is excellent.
I take it, Dara, we'll have this conversation with the kids when the time comes.
Yes, and smoking crack.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Sure.
There's many options for people to say there's no way out. You just named seven.
Yes. Yeah. People just aren't thinking.
So when you're 14, 15 years old, you decide to do stand-up.
Yeah.
What makes you do it, first of all? That's okay. Ridiculously young. I didn't know that I can do anything when I was young. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know how to begin a stand-up career.
I wouldn't even think, how do I do it? I would think, you're in school, this is all you can do.
Okay. This is interesting because I just moved my hands a certain way on the desk.
Oh, no, you're right.
I slapped my hands down on the desk and I got a flashback.
Okay.
You know, I'll get a flashback of, you know, where I said I walk like Red Fox.
Right.
Or something, and I'll think.
After seeing the documentary, you notice you walk funny.
And you know, sometimes when I'm thinking a word about something, I will find myself wringing my hands, and I'll go, I got that from all the Lon Chaney Jr. movies, where he'd look up at the moon and unfasten his tie, and then he'd wring his hands, knowing he was going to turn into a werewolf.
So it's like that, but you have a thought.
Yeah, but I slapped my hands down, and I remembered, and this is something everyone can identify.
Boy, we're really learning the process here. So, yeah,
they used to be the Winchell Mahoney time, and it was Paul Winchell, a ventriloquist, and he had a dummy, Jerry Mahoney. And sometimes on the show, they would have the dummy by itself, and they would actually have hands in the sleeves.
Okay.
And the way those hands would, that's the way I feel like, fuck it, I just wasted an hour telling something. It was one of those things like, I think it's when you first have Alzheimer's and you go, what am I talking about? But I don't know.
Do you find this on stage? Because obviously you have some ideas planned out, but also because your comedy, for lack of a better word, is absurdist, you don't know where you're going to end up going.
I find it's absurdist in the most absurd part is when in the middle of a bit or in the middle of being up there on stage, all of a sudden it's a slap in the face and I go, what the fuck am I doing up here?
Is there a ripped up napkin in front of my face?
Yeah, I'm doing stupid things and people are staring at me. What the fuck is going on here? And, oh, but how I got started.
You'd find it, yeah.
Why, it was like it was yesterday. And then it turns to black and white.
Okay, I follow what's going on.
Yeah. Okay.
And ding, ding, ding.
He was
ding,
a TV
ding,
show
ding,
just then.
Ding, ding. And they play a song from the 20s.
So
okay.
So you're a teenager. What makes you go, hey, yeah, I can do this?
I was a kid, as a lot of people were.
Right. A few people were.
Spoiler alert. Okay.
Surprising.
You might be wacky, but very relatable.
Yes. And I remember I watched loads of TV. And
yeah, you have tons of TV references.
Oh, yes.
I remember that. What was that HBO TV show? Where Dream On or where the guy?
Yes.
Throughout his life, it would cut to he's thinking of some old TV show because he was raised by TV by unattentive parents. That's Gilbert a little bit, it seems.
And it was like, and back then it was like not only were there the variety shows, where you got both the old timers who were still alive and new performers, but you also were loaded with old movies like Marx Brothers and anything, silent movies, gangster, monster movies I loved.
Did you actually want to be an actor, but you found stand-up?
There was wanting to be an actor, imitating actors I saw in a movie. And I didn't know. I wanted to be in some kind of show business. That stupid, like, oh, show business.
And where were you? Where'd you grow up?
In Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn. So there were comedy clubs for you to go to. What was the first time?
The first time, because I used to joke around and do imitations. And actually, my sister Arlene told me that she was talking to a friend, and her friend said, there's a club in Manhattan, and I don't remember what that club was.
But isn't this, by the way, in the documentary?
Yeah.
Your sister, rest in peace. Yeah. But she says, when the movie introduces her, do you remember anything about Gilbert being silly, being funny? Nothing remarkable about my brother.
What? Exactly. And it's like that there's some club in the city. They don't pay, of course, but you write your name down in the book and you wait for a few hours and they get to your name and they go, okay, so-and-so.
And this seemed exciting to you?
It at the time. And me and my two sisters traveled to Manhattan. And yeah, I don't remember what club it was.
Did you know what you were going to say?
Not really.
Did you know it was planned out? The comedians are tricking us.
Yeah, I didn't have it planned out. And I just started doing mainly imitations.
Of who? Like, do you remember?
Oh, I was doing like all the people I saw on TV, like Boris Karloff and Humphrey Bogart and Peter Lorre. Even back then, I was dated.
What does Humphrey Bogart sound like?
Yeah, well, that's a funny thing. There, my act was basically like, you don't find impressionists nowadays, unless you go to Vegas. In Vegas, they're still big. But back then, there used to be, you know, Frank Ocean, Rich Little, Will Jordan, George Kirby, Fred Travellina, Marilyn Michaels, and a bunch of others. And it was always the same. It was like, and if your waiter was Cary Grant, it might go a little something like this. And they turn around, muss up their hair, put on a face, and turn their collar inside out, and go, hey, you roll that chair. And that would be the... And my act was pretty much like that. I'd create situations. And they go, and then so-and-so shows up.
Right.
What was your favorite one?
Luckily, I've got most of it blocked from my head. And back then, we didn't have the internet. Because if we had the internet, I would have probably have recorded myself. And then it would be there for prosperity. How fucking awful I probably was.
Well, how did you do the first night with your sisters there?
Well, I always say either I did well or I was too stupid to know I didn't.
Do you remember waiting there and watching other people?
Oh, yeah. Most of them back then and those clubs were like folk singers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
And so were they doing funny songs?
No. Folk songs. Oh. Like, yeah.
It was just open to all kinds of art.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So when you went on, do you remember feeling nervous that it was your first time? Do you remember going, I'm going to start with this?
Also, I remember I was a little nervous, even the ride on the subway into the city. But I wasn't as nervous because, like I said, I had stupidity on my side. And it was like, well, first of all, it's stupidity when you go, oh, let's see. I do terrible in school, and I'm not really that popular. I know. I'll make a career in show business. And that's fucking stupid.
Yeah, like maybe the kids in school know me too well. Let me find total strangers.
And so it's all those years of doing it where and even after I do these failed TV shows, I still wasn't thinking of all the competition.
Well, it wasn't, you didn't step on stage and go, this might be my career. You said, let me try this.
Yeah. Well, I thought it would be my career.
But even on the first time?
Yeah. But yeah, really crazy.
So once you got on stage and held the mic or, you know, bumbly took it out of the thing or however it went, did you ease right into it? Did you feel comfortable up there?
What's great about your voice, literally, is that nobody can tell when you're nervous.
Oh.
Like he's always so calm. I'm like, he's literally dumping on stage. That's him.
One time a friend of mine was picking me up somewhere and I was, he stopped across the street and he watched me cross the street. And this was years ago. I was 20 something. And he said, you know what's great about you? When you're 90, you won't be moving around any differently than you are now.
I'm picturing from what little I know you and that documentary that you don't really share emotions. Are your sisters the same that they weren't able to say, hey, you did a good job?
I think pretty much. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So you guys all went on the subway silently home.
Yeah.
Gil was on stage again. Okay. Yeah. Good night.
Yeah. I think he enjoys to laugh. That sounds okay.
Yeah. No one threw anything at him. So.
Right. But yeah, how old were you? Do you remember? 14, 15?
15.
15 years old.
Did you think right after, yeah, I'm going to do this again as often as I want, as I can?
Not yet. It was still like there'd be stretches of weeks or even months. And then I go, okay, I'm going to do it again.
What made you go, all right, now?
I don't know. It was one night. I was leaving a house and I got on the subway. And I thought, you know, I think I'm going to do it every night from now on. And then it made sense. Yeah.
Because you're more comfortable on stage?
Well, once I started doing it every night, it made more sense because then you could get it in your head like, okay, I bombed with that thing yesterday, so I'll change it or do it differently or just cut it out. And then you start.
Do you remember the first time that you were on TV?
Oh, first time? Okay. There was one pilot I did that didn't air. And it wasn't me starring in it. It was like I was out there in L.A. auditioning for something else. And a friend of mine.
Did you do well on auditions, by the way?
Horrible.
Yeah?
Horrible.
Why? Were you nervous? Did you know?
Yeah, I was. I didn't know how to do it. And you don't. And, you know, when you first start acting, it's like. It's weird, you know, it's like when it's funny, like, you know, and they'll say, hey, why did they have an actor play the bartender? Why didn't they just get a bartender? Because a bartender, a real bartender would
once
go,
paid.
Yes, would you like another drink, sir? And so you need an actor. And back then, yeah, I had no idea of what acting was really.
But you were going out for this, you went out for this pilot, you got it.
Yeah, I was out there auditioning for something else, and a friend of mine just said to me, hey, you know, I've got a little part on this show, and they're casting for this other thing. And I went in, and they wanted me. And that was a show called The Further Adventures of Wally Brown.
It's a catchy name. It's a show.
Yeah. and to show how Hollywood, the art involved, I think the producer or one of the people at the studio was a big fan of the song Charlie Brown. You know, Charlie walks in the classroom, cool and slow. Who calls the English teacher daddy? Oh, Charlie Brown.
Dun, dun, dun,
yeah, Charlie Brown. He was a big fan of that song. So he said, let's make a show about it.
It didn't air, you say.
Yeah. Hmm. And legally, they couldn't call it Charlie Brown because that was owned by Schultz or whoever that guy was.
Do you know that song was written in under half an hour?
And so they changed it to Wally Brown and they made the kid black. And I forget who was Wally Brown, but Then his white friend, he had a white friend to give it some depth. Wackiness. That was this Peter Scolari. And to show what an original show this was, they visit the white friend, and he's got a father who's a cab driver in Queens who's a bigot. And I swear to God, you know, and the way it's played everything, shall I pick up a guy in the cab and he's this colored guy? And so he's out and out, Archie Bunker.
Yeah.
And his wife is a dingbat.
Yeah.
She's goofy. And so it's
Johnny!
Yes, yes, yeah. That was it.
I'm sorry, but there's a person behind you who might not know why you're referring to someone as a dingbat. She's
yes.
like, you don't get to call women dingbats. No, no, no. That's what Archie called his wife. Everything's okay.
Yeah.
This generation.
Oh. And so that was... So I guess the first thing that aired would have to have been a Saturday Night Live.
Mm.
And there, too. Stupidity. I went, they saw me at a club. They said, you want to come in and audition? Go on stage again at another night. And I did it. And they, you want to come over to, Rockefeller Center? We'll do auditions in the office. And, yeah, all right. And you want to improvise? Yeah, okay. And it was like, I hear people talk about how they were angry, like, other people would be taking bread at it. I was just, it never crossed my mind that I was in competition. It just, I don't know. Right. And then when they announced I got it, I remember not being overjoyed with that, as a normal person might be. And I said, all right.
And we have to come more than just Saturdays?
Yes. And then I remember, well, the show did terribly because we were following the original. It would be kind of like when we came in, if in the middle of when Friends was on the air, you said, we're changing the entire cast, but we're continuing the series. Mm. And people would be, yeah. And so they turned on this show. Everyone hated it. And then when I was let go, I remember there too. I was like, some people would be devastated. And I was like, oh, I'm fired. Well, all right.
How old are you?
Oh, I think it was like about 26.
And you weren't worried that where am I going to get a paycheck from another job?
Yeah,
funny is that, though? You have that problem where you think you're going to lose everything in any second, you know, famous for taking too many sandwiches on set. That only happened when you're a millionaire.
Yeah. It's
that's
like
funny.
Back then, I don't know, it was that thing where I always say, hey, I had stupidity on my side. Same as... it got followed with an even bigger success, and that was Thick of the Night.
Yeah, great Alan Thicke.
Oh, yeah.
Your buddy from Wife Swap.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
It doesn't bother you that he banged your wife. It doesn't even bother you.
But I got a chance to fuck Alan Thicke.
Okay, that's fair.
Ooh, Gilbert, hurt her. Ooh, that feels so good. Ooh, slip me, Gilbert, slip me. Ooh, yes, slip it in now. Ooh, yes, call me your Judy Beach.
Right, he was out there for coming off so clean cut. No one would even be able to guess behind the scenes.
I've never seen Gilbert so happy. Really?
Well, he rode for Alan Thicke, and I don't think Alan Thicke treated him well.
And the song. The theme song, mm-hmm. The Thick of the Night, which, because he got rich off commercial jingles, and the Facts of Life theme was his.
Oh, wow.
And so the theme to Thick of the Night, which he both sang and wrote was, Mama, don't leave the lane, and I'm on the road tonight. Everyone needs a dream to hold on. I want to make it on my own. Running underneath the night, under the city lights. Running underneath the night.
You think there should be that bouncing ball so we can play along?
Yes.
Did you, going back real quick, I would watch when people try out for SNL and how thrilled they are and nervous nowadays, but I saw the original cast when they tried out, they thought their time was being wasted. Chevy Chase is like, now what do you want me to do? Well, you're going to be the news segment. It'll probably be the most popular segment. Fine. What do you want me to read?
Yeah, and because back then Saturday Night Live was a meaningless, it was some title.
Right.
Yeah.
Wait, I want to hear. Oh, good.
No, just Jim Belushi would be like, "What? What do you want me to do now?" It's like, "I'll do one of your characters." We saw you doing the club. Fine.
Yeah, they probably.
I'm an exploding zit.
Yeah, they probably thought it would never even air. Yeah. You know,
right?
What was writing like for that show?
I didn't get along with the writers, and the writers didn't get along with me. And one part to show how much they loved me, there was a funeral skit where I was the body in the coffin.
Why didn't they like you?
I don't know.
Did you sing the theme song like that all day?
Oh, see. Oh, well, that was Saturday Night Live where they didn't like me. I'm sure. Oh. I don't think they liked me on Thick of the Night.
They
either.
Didn't.
But no.
You guys, I saw Wife Swap. Believe me, the guy did not like you. My old friend Gilbert. No, you weren't enjoyed. What was the first big success? Where you're like, all right, okay, now I have some money in the bank.
So I got on Thick of the Night. Also, wasn't thrilled. Didn't like staying out in L.A. And then when they fired me, I remember thinking, oh, this is a relief.
Right. Why do you like New York, by the way? You seem hermit-like. Why do you like this?
I don't know. People look at me and they say, oh, because the culture and the
energy
and the realism. And I'm just like, I grew up here and like,
you know where your house is.
Yeah. I know where my house is. I know where the cheaper place to buy a container of milk is. That's my...
I don't want to start over.
I don't attend the opera or go to museums every day. And so my first real success was... I was just playing. I'd go to the clubs every night, and I think I was at Catch a Rising Star, and there were some people from MTV, and they say, we're having auditions tomorrow for something on MTV, and then I said, all right, and I showed up there, and I just went on camera and just started improvising. I didn't have anything prepared. And I just started improvising
about
stuff.
About what? Just anything?
They said it's, a 24-hour music video. So I think
so
I started doing a thing like, and, the guy who invented that said, how about 22 and a half hours of music videos? No, not quite. How about 23 and 15 minutes of music? And then I did it. And pretty much forgot about it and went home. And
then, next thing you know, I'm on the Real World.
Yeah. next thing I know, people are coming up to me on the street going, oh, I see you all the time on MTV. And I go, you do? And they had chopped up the audition I did in little pieces and showed it throughout the day.
What, without you knowing?
Yeah, I didn't know.
Yeah, I heard a story where Dennis Leary thought he was just telling a friend he loved Cindy Crawford. Next thing you know.
and I remember then I call him and I said, oh, you showing these? And they said, yeah. And I said, well, do I get paid? Can I get any money for this? And they, I think they said, oh, you know, they sent me a couple of hundred dollars. And
because you called and asked.
Which William Morris immediately found. Took 10% of.
Sure.
Even though they didn't even know I was on MTV. And that was the first good exposure I had where people liked me and thought I was funny.
Wow. That's so crazy to know that you're on TV by people getting in touch with you.
And I had this dopey agent, talk about redundant, and she was saying, well, you know, it's the way the director cut it up like that. It really makes you look good.
And oh, thought, wow.
And I thought, oh, like I'm Lassie or Rin Tin Tin.
Wow.
Where if you shoot on the left side of their face, they look like they're smiling. And if you put
that was my alarm. We're done with the story.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're supposed to like the Academy Awards.
Right.
Start tinkling on the piano.
Do you have representation now, or do you think?
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Are you happy with it? We won't
are
tell
you
them
ever.
Well, because your wife does a lot of your booking and handling and. I assume she did maybe everything. Does she not?
Well, I had someone say to me years ago, and I thought, this is, you know, I remember, like, when I knew nothing about the business, and you're just a guy trying to get in on a comedy club, and someone will say, oh, see that guy at the bar? That's an agent. And that woman over there, manager. And it sounds like they're magical. And then you go, eh, they have an office.
Right.
And I remember I one time after I'd been in the business for years, I was stopped by to see one of my agents. And I'm going down the elevator and there's like, you know, an attractive girl, obviously an aspiring actress. And she literally yells out, hooray, in the elevator.
Hooray?
Yeah. And I turned to her and she goes, you know, with a face lit up, she goes, I have an agent. And I thought, okay, now if you can get a job application for McDonald's too. Right. To help pay the rent.
I hope you said that out loud in front of her.
You never know what too soon is, do you?
No.
Give the girl a day. A couple drinks with friends, maybe.
Jesus.
So now that you've been in the business for how long? Wow.
It's 45.
45 years?
46.
Do you have, and a lot of people say go up every night, of course. Obviously, practice is really good. Do you have any advice other than that?
Like, even if it's specific, what would you tell a young Gilbert? Other than, hey, it kind of works out.
Wow. All this talk about comedians getting laid a lot is bullshit.
Okay.
Okay.
Stick jerk off twice as much.
Okay.
If it's possible to jerk off
That's
more than
advice.
I already was. And it's funny, whenever people ask me for advice, I always think two things. One, if they're asking for advice, they mean, can you sprinkle some magic dust on me and put me in movies and TV?
Right.
And it's kind of like when I tell them, well, I don't know. I mean, with me, I just kept trying to get on these clubs, and when they put me on, I performed, and you keep your fingers crossed and you keep doing it. And they get a look in their face,
right,
like the same way, like if when people ask, oh, I wish there was a way of losing weight.
Yeah.
Well, the way to lose weight is eat less food. Eat less cake and ice cream.
I tried everything short of diet and exercise.
Yes, yes. That's it. And it's like, that's the magic way to lose weight. Right. diet and exercise. And
is it hard when somebody says, do you have advice, the great Gilbert Gottfried, to just look at him and go, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
And so people, you know, that's why people don't want to hear you say, well, stop eating cake and ice cream and hamburgers and work out. No one wants to. You want to hear this, some pill. See, yeah.
Call my friend John.
Yes.
Ooh, you should do that. Oh, you set up a number where when they call, it's just an answering machine. And you're like, you know what? I'm glad you asked because I've been watching you on stage.
Yeah.
I think you're it. Right. Call my friend John.
And Gilbert will definitely spend extra money on that. He's taking an Uber pool out of here, but he'll definitely take the time to set up a fake phone number. Let's say Seinfeld was on an island and he was blowing Boris Karloff. What would that be like? Check out Gilbert's stuff at Real Gilbert. The website is gilbertgottfried.com. And the podcast you want to check out is Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. Okay. And of course, the documentary that we referenced is entitled Gilbert. And it is fantastic.
And it might go something like this. Oh, Mr. Karloff, I loved you and Frankenstein. And I love giving you a blowjob. Why, Mr. Seinfeld, I love having you fuck my cock. And I love when you talk about, hey, did you ever notice how matches don't light a second time? Oh, here, let me swallow your cum, Mr. Cole.
That's it. And now the closing theme song. What you just heard was my opening line. Please subscribe and tell your friends. Go to myopeningline.com.
Hello, I'm Kyle Ayers. I'm the host of Never Seen It, the podcast where comedians rewrite famous movies and TV shows they've never seen, and then we give them a read in studio. This is a clip I want to play for you guys from an episode where Langston Kerman rewrites Scarface. He's never seen it, but he wrote a script based on what he thinks he knows about it, and here's a clip. Give it a listen.
All right, Scarface, The New Frontier. Interior, happening discotheque. Remember when we called clubs discotheques? LOL, the 70s were crazy. Night. The crowd bustles with young, hot Mexicans who are supposed to be Cuban and all are dressed in butterfly collared shirts and pants that look like JNCO jeans and pleated khakis had a really weird baby. There's sex in the air and Poppy wants a whiff.
Oh my God.
Scarface, 22 to 45.
Like he's a television audience demographic.
Devilishly handsome. Not even a little bit Italian looking, so get that out of your dumb brain. Walks through the crowd with the confidence of a man who's going on MTV Cribs with the Ying Yang Twins one day. Does he actually have a scar on his face? Fuck no. Why would you even ask that? That's not important. What's important is that he is not at all a problematic stereotype and that he has come for his cocaine. As he approaches the red rope of the VIP, pronounced ve a pe in Spanish,
oh my God.
He spots his dear friend who is almost certainly going to become his enemy by the end of the film, Smooth Skin. Scarface yells out his signature line.
Ciao, Bella. It's me, Scarface.
Oh my God.